This is Stuart Molina, music director of the Harrisburg Symphony Orchestra, today talking to you about Jennifer Higdon's percussion concerto, which we will be performing on our next Masterworks program. Before discussing the concerto itself, I thought it would probably be a good idea to talk a little bit about percussion instruments and the range of instruments that you'll be seeing in this piece, and just a little bit about what it means to be a percussion player, a percussionist. Percussion instruments, by definition, are any instrument in which the sound is produced by either hitting it with something else, or with your hand, or another part of your body, or scraped, or shaken, or in fact, with any action that might produce a vibration. There are pitched percussion instruments, meaning percussion instruments that produce different pitches, instruments like the xylophone and the other keyboard percussion, like the timpani, pitched drums, and et cetera, et cetera. Then there are unpitched instruments, instruments like the bass drum, which produces a thud, or like the tambourine or cymbals, which produce crashes of various sizes and sorts. There's a wonderful reference site on the internet that I recommend you go to. I've included it both in the description of this podcast and also in my links and download page. And it's called the Sound Exchange. It's made by the Philharmonia Orchestra. And at this site, you can hear audio clips of the various instruments. And it might be a good idea to do that just so you can hear what I'm talking about and what these instruments sound like. In this particular piece, you're going to hear a very wide range of instruments. There are, in addition to the soloist, three other percussionists who will be playing very busy, very intricate solo parts as kind of a percussion section supporting the soloist. And each of them will have a setup of instruments. The soloist will be at the front of the stage, and there will be basically four stations for this percussionist to be at. The station that you'll see furthest to your right will be the vibraphone. The vibraphone is a pitched percussion instrument, like the xylophone and the marimba, but the vibraphone is made of metal. The bars that are hit are made of metal. And in addition, there are two other features to the vibraphone which make it unique. The first is a sustain pedal. Similar to what you have on a piano, the sustain pedal will allow the sound to continue on. You hold down the sustain pedal and the sound will be sustained. If you let go of it, the sound ends. The other feature of a vibraphone, which is additionally unique, is a motor, which will circulate the sound and create kind of a vibrato effect when it's on. Above the vibraphone, you'll have a set of what's called crotales. Crotales are little cymbals. They're sometimes called Chinese cymbals. And you'll have a set of these, each in different pitches. So that too will be able to play melodies. They, of course, the sound is much, much smaller than large cymbals. And so he'll be able to play melodies on the crotales and melodies on the vibraphone. Next to the vibraphone station, you'll have a marimba. A marimba is a larger keyboard percussion instrument. Like the vibraphone and the xylophone, the marimba is set up similar to a piano with white keys and black keys. But the marimba, the bars are generally made of wood, giving it a warmer sound, and the bars get wider as the pitches get lower. On the other side of the conductor, there will be two other stations. The one on the furthest left to the audience will be something akin to a drum set, a lot of different drums and a pedaled bass drum. The various kinds of drums you'll have will be tom-toms, which are pitched drums, timbales, which are slightly deeper drums, bongos, which you're all familiar with from world music, and then a series of cymbals, Chinese symbol, which is smaller and a little tangier, a suspended symbol, which gives you kind of this whoosh kind of sound when it's hit. And then, as I said, a bass drum with what's called a kick pedal. The bass drum sits on the floor, and the player plays the bass drum with his foot, hitting the kick pedal, which triggers a mallet to hit the drum. Next to this drum set is a table, and on the table are a lot of smaller percussion instruments. You might think of these as kind of the toy percussion instruments. Not easy to play, but things that you could generally hold in your hand. And the various things on this table will include a cowbell, a set of wood blocks, high and low, giving you different pitches, temple blocks, which are kind of square blocks that are hollow inside, creating a different kind of sound, a break drum, which is nothing short of a break drum, which will be played with mallets, castanets, of course, castanets coming from Spanish music, claves, which are two wooden sticks that are hit together, also used in South American and other world music, and then what's called a Peking opera gong, which is, you know, dinner is served, whoosh, but much smaller than the large gong. So, at any rate, this is the setup that the soloist will use, the instruments that the soloist will play on, and during the course of the piece he'll be moving side to side quite a lot so that he can access the various instruments. Then you have the three percussionists in the orchestra. The first percussionist will play a marimba, a suspended cymbal. He'll also have a table with smaller instruments. He'll play the castanet, the claves, and the wood blocks. He'll have tom-toms, he'll have a sizzle cymbal. And a sizzle cymbal is a cymbal that has little pieces of metal attached that are allowed to vibrate, creating a sizzly kind of sound. And he too will have a set of crotales, the small Chinese cymbals. The second percussionist will have chimes. Chimes are long, thick, suspended tubes of metal, which are generally hit with a wooden mallet and create the sound of, obviously, of chimes. You might think of churches or bell towers that produce these sounds. He'll have a suspended cymbal. He has a glockenspiel. A glockenspiel is a set of orchestral bells, also set up as a keyboard, hit with much smaller mallets, and producing really high-pitched bell-like sounds. He'll have a snare drum, which is a side drum with a snare or a metal spring on the bottom, which produces that unique sound, a low bongo drum, three tom-toms, also a small and large woodblock, and a gong, also called a tam-tam, but a large gong. And then he will also be playing on the vibraphone. The third percussionist plays on vibraphone. He has a hiro, which is a scraped instrument, a small triangle, which just gives you a little bit of a ting at the top end of the spectrum. Temple blocks again, those hollowed out blocks that are different pitches. A bass drum, suspended cymbal, and a ruta, which is actually just a group of roots or branches that are used to strike. So as you can hear, there's an enormous variety of sounds, enormous variety of instruments that are being played in this piece. And that brings up a point that I'd like to mention, which is that percussionists who play in the orchestra are generally expected to be able to play all of these instruments. It's rather an enormous undertaking to become a percussionist. Many begin as simple drum players, you know, playing snare drum in school bands. But then when they make the choice to become a professional drummer, they're suddenly faced with this wide range of instruments that they must master. And this is why I've often said that the percussionists are the most astonishingly gifted and accomplished members of the orchestra, because whereas a violinist must master just one instrument, not a small undertaking, I might add, the percussionist must master no fewer than a dozen and up to several dozen instruments. In order to perform a percussion concerto like this, Chris Rose, our soloist, must be extremely adept at all of the keyboard percussion instruments, vibraphone, marimba, crotales, as well as all of the standard drums and cymbals. And in addition to that, all of the handheld small percussion. So it should be an incredible display of virtuosity in a very wide range of circumstance. Now, Jennifer Higdon's percussion concerto is very beautifully written. I love the fact that she uses three additional percussionists in addition to the soloist, because what that allows is a combination of sounds that you wouldn't be able to have otherwise. And the very opening of this piece is a perfect example of that. It starts with just the solo percussionist playing on marimba, playing kind of open chords. And the way that chords are produced, because obviously if you hit a marimba, it's going to make a sound and the sound will decay. And so in order to sustain the sound on a marimba, you do what's called rolling the notes. You play with the sticks in quick succession. And that will sustain the sound. And the chords that she uses in the opening of this concerto are open chords, meaning chords that aren't necessarily triads, but rather, for example, the opening chord is two open fifths, and then two other opening fifths, and then two other opening fifths, and then two other opening fifths. Creates kind of a gentle, pulsating mood. Then, one by one, the other percussionists are going to join the soloist, also playing pitched percussion keyboard instruments. The first will be the vibraphone joining these rolls, and then the chimes. Now, the chimes, of course, aren't a keyboard percussion instrument, but they are bell-like. They are played with mallets, and so it creates yet a new timbre that joins with the others. And then finally, the last percussionist will join, also playing marimba. And so you get this combination of percussion, bell-like percussion sounds, pitched percussion sounds, and it's quite an effective opening. Eventually, they will join together and play a rhythm that will repeat, and this will lead us into the first main section of the orchestra's part in this piece. Now, time limit is going to limit the amount that I can talk about the way this piece is composed, but I would like to talk about certain elements that Jennifer uses in putting this piece together. The first is combinations of chords, chords being major chords, minor chords, and she sticks with these very tonal chords, but combines them with others. For example, the very first chord that the strings will play is a C major chord on top of a D major chord. And the upper chord, the C major chord, will resolve up to a D major chord. The bottom will resolve down to a C major chord. So you have these combinations of D and C going in opposite directions. So first, C on top, D on the bottom. Second, D on top, C on the bottom. And you'll hear a lot of these interesting combinations of chords. You'll also hear movement in chords. So in other words, actual melodies or scales where it will be moved as full chords. For example, shortly into this opening section, the piano and the strings and the woodwinds together play a melody, all performed in major chords. And other similar sections like that. So she's using a very tonal language, but in a way that certainly doesn't sound like 19th century tonality. It has a very modern kind of sound to it. But there's never anything that feels unwelcome. It's always comfortable combinations of tones. As soon as this orchestral section begins, you hear a motive in the low brass, which will be used throughout the piece. So I thought I would play that for you as well. And that is made up of a minor seventh up and then a major seventh down. Just a simple motive made up of two intervals that she's able to use to create a lot of interest throughout the piece. Just to go over a couple of other musical ideas that you're going to hear to get into your head, there are several sections where you're going to hear alternations of high and low, chords in the treble, followed by chords in the bass, and then switching to chords in the bass, followed by chords in the treble. They will sound different each time, but just to give you an example of what they'll sound like, something like this. Again, she's using major chords, but in combinations that make it sound a little bit more modern, a lot more interesting, and then using rhythmic changes, going from low to high alternation to high to low alternation, to keep things rhythmically interesting. One of the things that you'll find in Jennifer's composition is she's quite brilliant at using different rhythms to create variation. And of course, one would figure in a percussion concerto that this would be crucial, but it's not just in the percussion parts that you find the interesting rhythmic variation, also throughout the orchestral parts. The last melodic element that I'd like to play from this opening section is kind of a culminating melody, a melody that you hear towards the end of this opening section for the first time, and it's both rhythmic and melodic. The melody and the rhythm sound like this. But in addition to the melody, she always harmonizes it. And here she uses slightly more complicated chords. And then she will change the orchestration. So the first time you hear it, it's with the strings and the piano. The second time, in a much stronger way, you hear it with the brasses, and then towards the very end of the piece, you'll hear it by the whole orchestra, bringing this opening section to its culmination. Now, the piece as a whole is in three parts. The opening section I've just spoken about a little bit, which is bright, exciting, dramatic, and for the most part, strong. The second movement is completely different, much more ethereal in its sound, much quieter. It builds in intensity as the piece progresses to a rather extremely strong finish, but always in a much more lyrical way. And the percussion solo and sections are playing, for the most part in this movement, on, again, pitched instruments. So it begins, after a waning of the first movement, very quietly, with various cymbals and marimba, but this time she uses a different effect. On the keyboard instruments, she uses a bowed stroke, meaning the players are actually using bows to produce the sound, which creates a warmer, slightly eerie sound. In addition, she has the timpani player actually placing small cymbals, crotales, on the head of the timpani, hitting the cymbals, and then moving the pitch pedal of the timpani up and down, creating kind of a wah-wah effect for these cymbal sounds. It's very difficult to describe what the overall effect of this is. You'll have to actually come to the concert to hear it, But it's quite an extraordinary contrast from what we've heard before. Even in the quietest moments of the first movement, you have nothing that's quite as atmospheric as this opening of the second part of the piece. The soloist does emerge from this texture and play solo melodic material on the vibraphone for a while, and then it is accompanied by strings playing, again, major chords for the most part, but in combination with others. So you'll hear the same kind of harmony as we heard at the beginning. The D's and C's combined together, and other movement of major chords. And then you'll hear some lyrical playing in the woodwind accompanying the vibraphone. It's a very lyric, very expressive, I would even say a slightly romantic approach in this second movement. I don't want to spend too much time on it, but there is one moment in the middle of the movement which I think is particularly beautiful, where she brings the harp and the celesta into play. The celesta is a keyboard, like a piano, small, but made up of bells rather than of plucked strings, or strings that are hit with hammers. And so you have these two additional timbres playing with the percussionists, and it creates, again, like the opening of this movement, a very beautiful, atmospheric, tender moment in the middle of this movement. And soon after that, things begin to grow. Things begin to get intense, and it drives us directly into the last movement, which is a reiteration or a recapitulation of the opening section with a lot of the same materials. The first thing we'll hear is the alternation of chords again, etc., etc., and it'll take us through other material that we've heard previously, some of it repeated like we heard before, and others with variations that we haven't heard. This will then directly move into a cadenza. Now, in a typical concerto, a cadenza is where the soloist gets to show off his or her wares by showing how great a player they are. In this particular cadenza, it begins as a section cadenza. So you have the three percussionists and the soloist playing very intricate rhythms on different instruments together. This doesn't last all that long. Soon we do have a solo cadenza, and we'll have to see what Chris Rose has to offer us, but I've heard him play solo improvisation before, and it should be quite dazzling. And then at the end of the long solo section, the percussionists join in again, and then they are joined by the timpani, which then brings us back into a reiteration of the very opening tutti section with the with our opening elements as we heard before, and it will bring the piece to a rather smashing and extremely exciting finish. I think this is going to be a highlight of the season for us performing this piece on so many different levels. One is that it again gets to feature one of our fantastic virtuoso players as a soloist. But secondly, I think it will be incredibly exciting for the audience to hear a piece of brand new music. Jennifer Higdon will actually be there at the performances, both participating in my pre-concert lecture and in our post-concert question and answers, to hear this brand new music written by one of the country's most exciting composers, and to hear a percussion concerto, which is, to be honest, a kind of concerto that isn't often performed. More and more as we move into the 21st century, but still I think the sound will be very refreshing, very exciting, and I think that this piece is a dazzling work of composition. So I think all the elements are in place for a wonderful, wonderful evening. The next podcast, which should be put up in the next couple of days, will deal with Ravel's La Valse, and then soon after that with Rimsky-Korsakov's Capriccio Espagnol.